I'm Rick Ganley. This is NHPR News.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. As President Obama and top congressional leaders meet today about the so-called fiscal cliff, fears about its impact are spreading beyond the Beltway and into the states. From New Hampshire to California, state leaders are worrying about how their own economies might be affected by this potential double whammy of tax increases and federal budget cuts. More than a dozen mayors went to Capitol Hill yesterday to express their concerns. They echoed what many New Hampshire officials have been saying, that state revenues are still on shaky ground and can't absorb deep federal cuts to programs such as public education, roads, or law enforcement. Also, they're worried that higher taxes will leave fewer dollars in state residents' pockets, hurting consumer spending and, by extension, local businesses. Today in The Exchange, a fiscal cliff made of granite, how this combination of budget cuts and tax increases might affect New Hampshire's economy. Let's hear from you. What possible impacts do you see in our state if Congress and the president don't resolve this issue? What do you think is the way out of this situation? And how confident are you that agreement could be reached? The Exchange number is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org is the address. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page or on the Exchange page at nhpr.org. We begin the hour with a new report by the Pew Center on the States that examined one aspect of this, the impact of the fiscal cliff on state budgets. Ann Stopher is with us. She's project director for the Pew Center on the States. And Ann, welcome to The Exchange. Thanks for your time.
Laura, thanks so much for your interest in the report. I'm happy to be here.
Well, and it just came out yesterday, so we're still diving into it. But if you could summarize, Ann, how will this fiscal cliff, this supposedly perfect storm of tax increases, federal spending cuts, how is this going to affect states the most?
Well, I think what's interesting and what we found in our report is that the federal changes will automatically affect states on both the tax and spending sides. But there is a real variability on the impacts on states based on their budget structures and economies. So, for example, 15% of Hawaii's economy is dependent on federal defense spending compared to only 2.2% for New Hampshire. And while, for example, New Hampshire is not affected by a lot of the provisions on the tax side that we looked at, it is one of the 33 states with links to the federal estate tax changes that would see increases in revenues. So I think the wide variability means that there isn't one overall greater impact on the states than anything else, but it does mean that the changes are automatic and something that state policymakers will have to respond to.
And just remind us, if you could, Ann, because that's an important point that you just made, how closely linked state budgets are to federal budgets. I mean, there are some state agencies here in New Hampshire that are largely federally funded through grants and federal programs and so forth.
Right. Well, in general, what we looked at in the most recent data from 2010, federal grants to states made up one in every $3 in state revenues.
Wow, that's
so
a lot.
About a third of that is a lot. And the sequester that of the federal spending that will affect federal spending affects 18% of federal funds going to states for programs including education and housing. So a state's variability to these vulnerabilities, these cuts really varies. The grants subject to sequester make up 10% of South Dakota's revenue, while for New Hampshire it is 6.8%.
So an impact, but perhaps not as severe as in other states.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Just proves the range of vulnerabilities that states have to this.
You know, there was a small footnote, Ann, at the bottom of one of the charts that caught my attention. It refers to an overall economic slowdown that could result if the full fiscal cliff is allowed to take effect, saying this economic slowdown could overwhelm the other impacts that you looked at. Can you clarify that for us, Ann? I think I know where you're going, but I'd love you to give us a little more detail on what you're trying to say there.
Right. Well, what we're trying to say is that it's important to note that in our report, we looked at each of the provisions in the fiscal cliff, you know, the tax and spending provisions, separately, and we didn't look at the effect on state revenues of more than one or all of those provisions happening at once.
I see.
And nor did we look at how state policymakers might respond to that. And what that comment about the general economic slowdown refers to is the Congressional Budget Office has projected a general economic slowdown if the country went over the fiscal cliff in its entirety. Our report is really looking at each of the individual provisions because we see the cliff as a series of policy decisions that will have to be made And when and whether all the decisions about those provisions will be made, policymakers will at least have now the information and to look at the impact on the states.
Okay, Ann, thanks a lot for giving us your time this morning. We appreciate it.
Really, really enjoyed it. Thanks so much, Laura.
Ann Stopher, Project Director for the Pew Center in the States, which just put out a new report looking at the impact of going over the fiscal cliff on state budgets. You can join us with your questions and comments. What possible impacts do you see of this so-called fiscal cliff in our state if federal leaders don't resolve this issue? 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page or on the exchange page at nhpr.org. Our guests for the hour are Amy Schmidt, Associate Professor of Economics at St. Anselm College. And Amy, welcome back. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Also with us by phone, Brian Gottlob, President of Polycon Research, which focuses on economic and public policy issues. And Brian, welcome back to you too. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Laura.
Well, Amy, this imagery of a cliff, it's pretty dramatic. It makes for great headlines. But how do you picture it, Amy, if Congress and the president don't get it together? Do we actually fall into the abyss on January 1st, or is this more of a slope that we tumble down gradually?
Well, we have an across-the-board cut in a lot of the discretionary programs and defense spending of about 8% or so, which is certainly a significant number. Those don't all have to happen on January 1st. I think that there is a little bit of time once we hit January 1st. People are going to see the payroll tax cut, that payroll tax holiday disappear right away. So that will show up in their paychecks the first week of January. And likewise, we could see some of the withholding figures change for the Bush tax cuts as well. So some of the impacts are going to be immediate. Some of the impacts, I think, will take a little bit longer to happen. I do think it's important to note that the object here is to cut $1.2 trillion from the budget over a 10-year period. And that's what they were unable to do by agreement during the summer of 2011 that led to this deal. The whole idea of this fiscal cliff is to make both sides, the Republicans and the Democrats, face a scenario that is so unpleasant that they would work together to avoid that. That hasn't happened yet. Alternatively, it's also important to remember that the grand bargain that the president and House Speaker Boehner were working on was talking about $4 trillion in cuts.
So this is even less ambitious than what had been
exactly
talked about earlier.
Exactly. This is really considered the minimum. And I think that, you know, ever since we hit the Great Recession, there's been a tension between short-term spending and tax cuts to help the economy get through the recession and the long-run cutting of deficits that inhibit national savings, which is needed for economic growth.
Brian, how about you? How do you picture this? Again, the imagery of a cliff, is that how you're imagining it in your mind or not?
That's really probably way too dramatic. But it's really, it's too dramatic because it's not a cliff. As Amy pointed out, a lot of these provisions are going to take place gradually. Some will hit immediately. Some will be more gradual. But in a way, it's appropriate because in combination, even though they don't all take effect immediately, in total, the impact is so dramatic that the cliff analogy is kind of appropriate. We need to focus on the dramatic changes that these policies will engender in our fiscal structure and in the economy. So to that extent, it's important. We need to get people focused on it. We need to get policymakers focused on it. So that dramatic analogy fits, but it's probably not in reality appropriate. It really is more of a slide than a cliff.
And yet, I would imagine, and correct me if I'm wrong, Brian, there is a psychological impact that is dramatic,
huge.
Right? Talk about that a little bit, Brian.
Yeah, I think that's huge. You know, this is one of those times in a country where I think the public, certainly business people that I talk to, are looking at the efficacy of our government. Do we have the ability to deal with a difficult problem? You know, and that's really the kind of thing that tests great countries. Can they deal with the crisis? Can they deal with the really difficult issues? So I think a lot of people, and certainly a lot of businesses that I talk to, are looking at the resolution of this, or the potential resolution of this, as really a statement about whether our government works.
Yeah, Amy, jump in on that. Yeah,
yeah, and I want to just add the ratings agencies, when they downgraded American debt in that summer, what they were most concerned about is the fact that both sides can't work together, that it seems to be a dysfunctional government right now. And I'm afraid of how the markets might respond if we do go over the cliff. So not only the real effect on the economy, but what market impact might be.
Well, and here's a question. It's more of a political one. And I know both of you are economists, but Brian, I'm going to throw it at you anyway. So I mentioned earlier, states are worried about budget cuts to public education, law enforcement. We heard from Ann Stopher about the impact on state budgets. In one way, Brian, isn't this what voters said they wanted? During the campaign, Republicans and Democrats, to a person, said, I support leaner federal government. I vow to resolve the debt. Send me back to Washington. I'll fix the deficit problem. So isn't this, in a way, what people want, Brian?
Sure. But it's a perfect example of be careful what you wish for. You may get it. This is a situation where I think broadly the public and business people, the media, policymakers understand the need to do something. They all want to do something. Look, we've gone from a 50-year period or so from 1950 to 2008 where our debt as a percentage of gross domestic product ranged from between 20 and 50%. Now we're at 73, and if we don't do anything, we'll be at 100% in a decade. So everybody wants to do something. The problem is that anytime you do something, you're going to negatively affect either via increases in taxes or reductions in spending that affects somebody. So the devil is always in the details. And once people realize that they'll be getting a little bit less in their paychecks, they'll be maybe not getting different expenditures to benefit them, they may think twice about it. I hope not, but that's the reality.
All right. And after a short break, we'll delve from this big macro picture into more of a micro picture, how going over this fiscal cliff could affect us here in New Hampshire. We'll start taking your calls to the number 1-800-892-6477.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. And more on facing off over the fiscal cliff coming up on The Exchange at 10 o'clock. It's the Diane Rehm Show. NHPR is more than our daily broadcast. Check out our website to listen back to a story you might have missed or only caught a part of. Find more information or related stories about something that interests you. Subscribe to podcasts. Learn about special events. There's always something more at nhpr.org. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Gripponi Auto Group, featuring multiple lines of fuel-efficient, environmentally friendly cars at Gripponi Auto Junction in Bow and online 24 hours a day at gripponi.com. From Mill Travel American Express, with nearly 100 local travel counselors seeking additional travel pros to join the company, resume and thoughtful cover, to jobs at milltravel.com. And from Hearing Solutions New England, where audiologists diagnose hearing loss and dispense hearing aids in Nashua, Manchester, Concord, and online at hearingsolutionsne.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, the fiscal cliff in the Granite State. How this combination of federal budget cuts and tax increases could affect New Hampshire's economy. Let's hear from you this hour. What possible impacts do you see in our state if the federal government doesn't resolve this issue? What do you think is the way out of this situation? How confident are you that top lawmakers and the president, meeting today, might reach agreement? The exchange number is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page or on the exchange page at nhpr.org. Our guests are Amy Schmidt, Associate Professor of Economics at St. Anselm College, and Brian Gottlob, President of Polycon Research. He's been looking at the impact on the states. And Brian, let's dig into that a little bit more, if we could. What are the main ways that you see going over this fiscal cliff affecting the Granite State?
Yeah, I think there's, you can really look at it from two perspectives. Obviously, the expenditures, which I think the to a large degree, a lot of the studies have focused on that I've seen, what money is from the federal government is being spent in states and how that will have the how that will affect the states. The other way is certainly through the tax increases. And I don't know anybody who's done a comprehensive study of each of those, but just to give you some idea, back when the payroll tax cut was first enacted as part of the stimulus back in 2009, I think I estimated that it was about a $600 million break for New Hampshire residents. That's going to disappear.
Wow. So just
right
that piece alone.
Just that piece alone. And if you work that through your economic models, anyone out there who's got one, you'll see that that'll have in itself a pretty significant impact on consumer expenditures. And as a result, we'll over the course of a year, and it won't happen obviously January 1, but over the course of the year, if you extract $600 million just in that provision alone, you know, you're talking about potentially having an effect of a couple of thousand jobs. Now, that's just one aspect. There's obviously higher marginal rates that will have other impacts that, to my knowledge, no one has modeled. On the expenditure side, some that are probably most apparent are things like the defense budget and defense expenditures. We have a number of, you know, important defense contractors. We have a lot of people who are employed at places like the Portsmouth Naval Shipyard. I mean, we don't have any bases anymore. But that impact has been estimated by some studies. And, you know, that will likely at least put at risk another few thousand jobs.
BAE Systems in Nashua is a major defense
contractor
and a major employer in New Hampshire.
Yeah, a major employer. And while we're not certainly at the top of the list of states in terms of the amount of defense spending in the state, we do have some very key employers, and it is significant. It's still a large number. And again, the Naval Shipyard, which is technically located in Maine, employs an awful lot of people from New Hampshire. There's a number of other areas that where expenditures will have an effect, and in total, probably put at risk at least another few thousand jobs. I think the thing to remember is that in New Hampshire, you know, federal fiscal policy is fundamentally redistributive. It takes from relatively wealthier states and sends resources to relatively less wealthy states. And because of that, New Hampshire gets relatively less from the federal government than we give to the federal government. So we don't maybe have as much in terms of grants and federal monies that are at risk. But on the other side, we have a pretty wealthy population, not a lot of high wealth, but a lot of in the middle class. And depending on what happens there, if middle class tax cuts aren't extended or in some way modified, we could have a pretty large impact on the disposable income of a lot of people in the state.
So in terms of federal spending, we don't have as much skin in the game. But in terms of these tax changes,
possibly. Yeah, it really depends on where, you know, a big part of this debate is who's going to take the hits. We all recognize that somewhere somebody's going to probably wind up paying more. Is it going to be wealthy? If it's wealthy, even though we're a relatively wealthy state, the percentage of high wealth individuals here isn't that extraordinary. But we do have a very broad middle class. We have relatively few poor individuals, and we have a broad middle class. So depending on, and luck, I think we're lucky here because I think a lot of people want to do something for the middle class. So we may wind up relatively less affected. But if not, and a broad swath of the middle class winds up paying higher tax rates, that would have some pretty significant impacts on expenditures, on the money available for households in the state, and thus have a pretty significant impact on the economy.
What do you think, Amy? Go ahead.
Well, I was looking at an article in the Nashua Telegraph yesterday that estimated 6,300 jobs lost in New Hampshire. And that's about 1% of employment in New Hampshire right now.
That's a lot.
It's a lot. And it's also, but it's very consistent with what the Congressional Budget Office is saying we would see nationally. So nationally, we're, you know, they're estimating that the unemployment rate would go up to around 9.1% a full percentage point increase, and a little bit more than that, actually. And that's about what we would see in New Hampshire, about a 1% increase in the unemployment rate. And that's significant. And of course, you know, as Brian's saying, people respond by cutting back their spending to all this uncertainty, to tax increases, all of the, you know, and there is fear right now that even this Christmas season, before the cliff happens, as people anticipate the cliff happening and hear about their taxes going up, that people will cut back.
Wow. So getting back to that psychological impact again, Amy.
Yes.
You know, I'm glad Brian mentioned the payroll tax holiday, and that came out of the stimulus era efforts by the Obama administration early on. I think that's important, Amy, because so often the fiscal cliff is described as the combination of automatic spending cuts and the end of the Bush-era tax cuts, which are important, but there's also this payroll tax holiday.
You know,
it could end.
Exactly. And, you know, the interesting thing that I don't think is spoken of very often is that most of these taxes, most of the tax increases that were would be affected by this cliff, they were always meant to be temporary.
I remember.
Tax cuts.
Yeah.
So, you know, the payroll tax is an excellent example that was there as part of the stimulus, as a temporary measure. And likewise, I mean, the Bush tax cuts were supposed to expire long ago. And again, because of the recession, they were extended, over and over again. Eventually, some of these are going to have to end. I think everybody agrees that our current budget situation is not sustainable. Nobody wants to go over the cliff because nobody likes this idea of across-the-board budget cuts and having the AMT, the alternative minimum tax, go and affect lots of middle-class people. But I think, you know, people do have to understand that at some point there's going to be some fiscal tightening, and that's going to slow down economic growth.
Although, you know, Brian, we've kind of gotten used to these Bush-era tax cuts. They've been around for more than a decade, so it's hard to go back.
It's really hard to go back. That's the problem with those kinds of cuts or any kind of subsidy. They're always good in theory and when they're working, but the problem comes when you try to remove them. But, you know, you have to look at the last decade. It's not been a great year for economic growth, so there's never been a really good time to remove those or to let them expire. And one of the fears that I have is that we are, you know, we've come from a recessionary period, and for a lot of people, we haven't really ever left the recession. We're really in a period or a time of recession fatigue. The prospect of, you know, just allowing all these provisions that are set to take place in January to take hold is that, you know, there'll be no doubt a short-term economic hit that'll be pretty significant. And so we'll go from maybe 4 years of economic malaise to five or six. And I think the public is really at a point where they're fatigued by a weak economy. And, you know, I don't know how long their confidence, you know, can be at relatively low levels. So it's not a good time to eliminate them. I know we need to do it. I do think we need to come up with some sort of bargain in which we can adjust it just enough to not, you know, continue to take a hit on the confidence side.
All right. Well, again, the number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. As we look at the fiscal cliff debate on Capitol Hill at the White House and how this debate is spreading out to the states, concern among state and local officials about how going over the fiscal cliff will affect them, our number 1-800-892-6477. Tell us what impacts you see of New Hampshire possibly going over this fiscal cliff. Are you worried about it? Do you think New Hampshire could withstand this pretty well? Again, our number 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. I want to bring another New Hampshire voice into our conversation, both of you. Joining us from D.C. is Matt Laszlo. He's the Washington correspondent for us here at NHPR. He's been following this discussion on Capitol Hill. And Matt, thanks a lot for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, what are you hearing from current members of Congress from New Hampshire, Matt, including those who are on their way out, Republicans Frank Gintt and Charlie Bass. What are they saying about their desire to resolve this issue before they leave D.C.?
Well, that's the interesting dynamic here. New Hampshire, along with the rest of the U.S., just elected on November 6th two new Democrats into the House of Representatives. But they don't get sworn in until January, and the fiscal cliff obviously hits in January. So these new members who the American public just put into office don't really get to decide these issues. It's Tea Party members, less so with New Hampshire's delegation, especially with Mr. Charlie Bass. Those members who were the 112th Congress who are on their way out, they get to decide these issues. So it's interesting to talk to them. They kind of got the fear of God put in them on November 6th. They're not as rosy as they were in 2010 after their sweeping victory. And so right now, they're kind of... Some are being vocal, but our delegation being a little bit quiet. In New Hampshire, the most vocal has been Senator Kelly Ayotte, who's really been very vocal about the cuts that are going to hit the Pentagon. But as far as her putting out an idea to solve the problem, you haven't really heard a big idea, so it's going to be interesting to see what deal Speaker Boehner in the House comes to, what bargain he comes to with the president. And right now the rank and file is kind of waiting to see what comes.
Yeah.
And with no deal on the table or no proposal on the table, they obviously are keeping pretty mum.
Well, it's interesting what you say, Matt, about how this is up to the 112th Congress, the current Congress. What incentive do these folks who are on their way out, like Mr. Bass and Mr. Gintt, what incentive do they have to really, you know, knuckle under and do this? I mean, they're on their way out. This isn't going to help their reelection.
Well, I guess I'm a cynic, so I apologize. But, you know, if they want to be a top lobbyist or something like that, or if they want to run again in 2014, which we just saw Carol Shea Porter after 2 years out, now she's back in. So after one term out, now she's back in. And the New Hampshire electorate, don't want to call them confused, but they're not satisfied with the makeup of Congress or with their lawmakers. So they've been kicking some people out. Mr. Bass was in office before, then was booted out by the voters, and then they put him back in, and then they booted him out 2 years later. So I can see Mr. Gintt and Mr. Bass potentially running for office again. So this is a big vote. This is the biggest issue, hence we're talking about it on Capitol Hill. So it's a legacy vote.
Sure. Good to have on your resume, so to speak. You know, you mentioned...
Or bad to have on your resume.
Oh, right. You mentioned Senator Ayotte, and certainly she has been talking on Capitol Hill and here in New Hampshire about her deep concerns over defense cuts and the impact in New Hampshire. What other immediate concerns do you hear our delegation talking about? For example, locally, you hear officials talking about public schools and Title I money. Other immediate impacts that our folks on Capitol Hill are talking about, Matt?
Well, this is everything. So half of the sequestration, that's political Hill speak for these automatic triggered budget cuts that are going to happen on in January because of the failure of the super committee. So this is basically a hatchet that lawmakers didn't want, and this was supposed to force them to cut this big deal. they failed, so now it's going to be about half of $1 trillion cutting the Defense Department. That's easy for everyone to talk about, but what everyone kind of forgets is the other half is basically on the entire federal budget. Some things were protected. I believe Social Security and Medicare were protected. I think Medicaid might see some cuts. I need to go and look that up, so don't quote me on that. But that's the rest of the federal budget. It would be food stamps, education, health care, things that we all, whether we like to admit it or not, depend on or have come to rely upon, especially local governments in the time where they're really cutting their budgets, have really depend on the federal government for these things. So if that other side of the budget, the non-defense side of the budget, sees these cuts, we're probably all going to feel it.
All right. Well, Matt Laszlo, keeping an eye on New Hampshire's congressional delegation for us. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.
That's Matt Laszlo, Washington correspondent for NHPR. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page or on the Exchange page at nhpr.org. Again, the number, 1-800-892-6477. And Brian Gottlob, Amy Schmidt, let's go to our callers now. Jonathan's joining us from Henniker. Hi, Jonathan. You're on the air. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you for having me. I'd just like to make a quick comment that I don't necessarily think that going off this so-called cliff is I think that we should. And we may initially take a hit, but in the long run, it would make us stronger.
And why do you think it would make us stronger, Jonathan?
Well, we need to make these cuts. I mean, basically, once we save the money, it makes our economy better
yeah.
in the long run.
You know, I've seen others, Jonathan, also saying what you said. And Amy Schmidt, I have read other analysts who say, yeah, let's go over it. Just like Jonathan said, it'll force us to do what we really need to do anyway.
I think it is the heavy-handed way that it's done that's the problem. And it would be better to have our elected leaders be able to reach an agreement and set priorities about what should be cut, what taxes should be raised, which shouldn't be raised.
I see, instead of automatic, boom.
Instead of the automatic. But I understand, you know, Jonathan's feeling after watching Congress for a couple of years unable to reach any kind of agreement. One begins to think maybe this is the only way that it can happen.
Well, and the other side to his question, too, Brian, I'll throw this to you, is there's been so much discussion, including us this hour, about the negative impacts of the fiscal cliff. Is there a positive side to going over, getting this thing solved? If not, the debt could really hurt our economy. We could end up like Greece, it's been said.
Sure, and actually, the Congressional Budget Office kind of makes that point in a study. If we didn't do anything, I think somewhere on the by 2022 or 2025, our debt would equal our GDP, and then 10 years after that, we'd be at 200% of our GDP, which is even worse than Greece. So, I think there certainly are benefits to addressing it. I don't think that's the issue. I don't think anybody disagrees that we need to do something. The question is can we do it in a way that minimizes the pain while maximizing the gain? And that's really the issue. There are some people who don't mind and will say, let's go through as much pain as possible now to enjoy the benefit. The benefit, of course, will be lower interest payments, which will make more capital available, lower interest rates, all really good things. But can we do that without inflicting a lot of pain is the issue.
All right, Jonathan, thanks a lot for the call. We'll take more of your calls after a short break, so keep it right here.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Restaurant Week Portsmouth and the Seacoast, a 10-day culinary experience featuring 49 restaurants now through November 17th. Details at restaurantweekportsmouth.com. And Capital Center for the Arts and tickets presenting the Improvised Shakespeare Company and the Spotlight Cafe, Wednesday, November 28th at 7:30, and tickets at ccanh.com. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
NHPR's Leadership Circle helps to provide a stable base of support for news and information in New Hampshire. I'm Betsy Gardella, president of NHPR and a member of the Leadership Circle. Circle members are, of course, listeners and fans of this service, but with federal funding of public media in a constant state of flux, their individual contributions of $100 a month provide resources we can count on. To find out more about joining the Leadership Circle, visit nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Monday in The Exchange, phasing out football, a local doctor concerned about injuries defends his proposal to ban high school football in his New Hampshire town. Email us your thoughts at exchange@nhpr.org and be sure to join us Monday morning live at 9. Today in The Exchange, facing off over the fiscal cliff as President Obama and congressional leaders meet on this issue today. Concern is spreading from the Beltway out to the states, including New Hampshire. Worries about how going over the fiscal cliff will affect state revenues, state businesses, state residents. Our number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. What questions do you have about the possible impact of going over the fiscal cliff for New Hampshire? Could this be possibly a good thing, as one of our callers recently suggested? Also, what do you think is the best way out of this situation? And how confident are you that lawmakers and the president can reach agreement? Again, our number is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page or on the exchange page at nhpr.org. And Amy Schmidt, just before the break, a caller, Jonathan from Henniker, said, you know, let's go over the cliff. This is going to force us to do what we really need to do. I thought that was an important point and a point that others have made. Did you want to add on to that as well, Amy?
Well, I just wanted to note that Senator Murray from Washington State said that it would change the whole discussion, so that instead of, you know, right now, legislators have to talk about which taxes to raise and which expenses to cut. Instead, it would be which taxes to cut and which expenditures to increase. So the Republicans, for example...
I'm not following you there.
Well, so once we go over the cliff and we have these automatic tax increases, for Congress to then address these issues after the fact, they would be voting on which taxes to cut. So to solve the problem before we go over the cliff, Congress has to decide which taxes to raise. And many of the Republicans have taken pledges saying they will not raise taxes.
The Grover Norquist pledge.
The Grover Norquist pledge, exactly. And Senator Murray says she heard that a lot. She was on the super committee and heard that her Republican colleagues could not vote to increase taxes, in part because of this Grover Norquist pledge. Once we go over the cliff, taxes have already been raised without a vote. Now it becomes a question, which taxes do we cut? And it might be much easier to find agreement on cutting particular taxes than raising taxes.
Interesting. Brian, go ahead and jump in.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And from a strategic perspective, that makes some sense to, depending on which side of the political aisle you're on. But, you know, I take a little different look. I mean, I think that's a great point, but I look at this as an opportunity to help inspire some level of confidence in our federal government and our policymakers. Look, we know that confidence and the esteem in which Congress is held over the last several years is really at very low levels. And this is, if I'm a member of that body, I'm thinking, here's an opportunity to help inspire some confidence in our ability to deal with difficult issues. I think that's important. I think that's important for a government that is not right now widely seen as being functional. And
well,
so,
Brian, more about that, since you do work with New Hampshire businesses and New Hampshire policymakers.
Yeah.
How much do you think this lack of confidence and this worrying about the cliff is affecting New Hampshire's business climate? I mean, bring it down to the ground for us. Are you hearing from businesses that, you know, I'm just not confident enough in our federal policymakers to go ahead and hire that person, even though I might like to, even though my current workers are feeling, you know, overwhelmed?
Yeah, I think that's very true. I think, you know, business people who are looking to make investments either in individuals through hiring or making capital investments, expansion of equipment, machinery, or facilities, they want to know what environment that is going to be put into place. They want to know what's the tax climate going to be, whether it's health care benefits and the ACA, the Affordable Care Act. All of those things, they want to know when they make those investments, when they make those hires, what kind of environment is that going to be operating in? Is it going to be as profitable as they think? Are they going to pay higher taxes? Can they depreciate this equipment or this building at the same rate? So what I think has happened, and it's contributed to the length of this recession, is that a lot of business decisions have simply been put on hold. They're waiting for some resolution. Business investment is very low right now, and that's having a pretty significant impact on our economy. Until we get some resolution, until there's some level of confidence, I think, among business people that they know which direction we're going to go in, I think they have some views of which way they would like it to go, but almost as importantly, they want to know that they'll have some certainty. And until that clarity comes into effect, it's going to continue to be a drag on the economy.
Well, and just real quickly, Brian, what specific types of businesses do you think are feeling most hesitant? I mean, we mentioned defense contractors before, but who else?
Yeah. Oh, I think any business. There is all kinds of any business is going to be affected by things like what they call tax extenders, the ability to expense investments in equipment and machinery, whether or not they can write that off, how quickly they can write that off or deduct that from their earnings. Those kinds of decisions. So it's small businesses are concerned about what is the ultimate resolution. And I know it's not. It's sort of a part of this fiscal cliff, the health care, Affordable Care Act, which could have provisions in terms of their benefits and their health care payments. Until all of that is resolved, they're not really going to be certain of what it's going to cost to hire someone. So it's really across the board, Laura. It's small business. It's big business. I think to a larger degree, some of the investment decisions that are hampered are bigger business issues. But it's really across the board. It's just so much uncertainty about what it's going to cost to hire somebody. What is the tax environment going to be? What is the regulatory environment going to be? Whether it's benefits, healthcare, that a lot of decisions are simply put on hold, and I think that's had a drag on the job growth, not only in New Hampshire, but certainly across the country.
Let's take another call, both of you. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Join us with your questions, comments, concerns about the impact of going over the fiscal cliff on us here in the Granite State. 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Amy and Brian, let's go to Irina in Contoocook. Irina, I hope I'm pronouncing your name right. Go ahead.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I also want to voice that I think going over the fiscal cliff is frankly a good thing. I have very little confidence that in the Congress or they will make a decision to see what should be cut. I don't think that's going to happen. So I think this is the best way to go forward. Another of my concern is what the rating agencies are going to do to our treasuries. And how is that going to impact our credit rating? I'm going to take my comment offline. Thank you.
Irina, thank you. So Amy Schmidt, yet another caller saying, hey, let's just go over it.
Right, but then she also talked about the ratings agencies. So right now our debt is very attractive. Interest rates are really very low. So at this moment in time, we don't have a problem selling our debt, especially compared to what's happening in Europe. A lot of money has come to the United States because of the troubles elsewhere, and our interest rates are at historic lows, which, of course, also leads to lower mortgage rates. If we go over the cliff, if the credit agencies make another adjustment to our debt rating, it's not clear if that would have a negative effect and be a self-fulfilling prophecy that our debt would become less attractive as a result.
Irina, thanks for the call. Let's take another one. This is Nick in Milford. Hi, Nick. You're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say that I don't think it's a good idea for us to leap over that cliff. I work in defense myself here in New Hampshire, and I know a lot of other people who are also worried about the cliff in the defense area, just because a lot of jobs stand to be lost. And I think it's really only going to make times harder for people who are already having a tough time.
Yeah, and as we heard earlier, New Hampshire doesn't have quite as much defense contracting as some other states, but still a fair bit. You're right, Nick. What are people saying at the office then?
There's really right now, there's not too much rumor going around. I mean, stuff here and there, a lot of talk about layoffs every other month, it seems, there's concerns about the possibility of more workers losing their jobs. And right now, I think it's still just a lot of people are kind of freaked out about it.
Yeah, everybody's in a wait-and-see mode. Thanks for calling in, Nick. What do you think, Brian?
Well, he's right. There's a lot of people who are worried. I mean, I think I don't know his firm, but he's kind of going through what you know, I live over on the seacoast, and it seems like every other year people over here are worried about what's going to happen to the Portsmouth Naval Shipyard. And so they deal with that every other year, it seems like. Is that facility going to remain at, you know, at full capacity, or is it going to be cut down? You know, we talk a lot about BAE Systems. It's certainly the largest defense contractor, but, you know, I have looked at defense contracts in the state, and I can tell you it reaches down to very small companies, you know, smaller machine shops that have subcontracts to, you know, to BEA. So it's a large, important issue. I look at this issue as more than just those direct jobs. Again, if we go over the fiscal cliff, what does it say about our ability to deal with problems, to deal with what is arguably the most important fiscal policy issue this country's dealt with in decades? If we just say, let's go over it, that's a long-term statement about our government's ability to rationally deal with its fiscal issues. So I think it doesn't do anything for confidence. It may have a beneficial impact. It may get us to the same point, but it'll have a detrimental impact on the confidence of our government. And I think we really need that right now.
And Amy, I know you have to leave us a little early to teach a class. Final thoughts from you on this cliff as we approach it, and especially as it relates to us here in New Hampshire.
Yeah, I agree with Brian and what Brian's saying about confidence and confidence in the government to solve big problems. I think that there could be a way around that if there could be a deal made and announced that if we go over the cliff, here's how we would deal with it right away, which changes the baseline but doesn't let the problem linger. Something over the next year or two, there are going to be cuts, probably totaling around $1.2 trillion over a 10-year period. The question is, can we do it in a way that causes the least pain? But there will be cuts coming.
All right. Amy, thanks a lot. We really appreciate you giving us your time this morning.
Thank you for having me.
That's Amy Schmidt, Associate Professor of Economics at St. Anselm College. The number for you to join us with your questions and comments in these last few minutes is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Brian, I have read that at the state level, some states are getting ready for the fiscal cliff, at least as much as they can, looking at which government agencies receive the most federal funds, trying to set aside a little more state money to make up for the possibility of fewer federal dollars. Virginia and Vermont were especially mentioned as kind of preparing for this. What would you advise New Hampshire officials to do, especially the new incoming governor, Maggie Hassan?
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I think, unfortunately, you know, a lot of states have been dealing with their own fiscal crisis unrelated to the fiscal cliff. I think New Hampshire's been one of them. So I haven't really heard much talk about that. I have to think that, you know, some of our agencies that receive a fair amount of federal funding, education being one, but transportation in particular, that's been a huge issue, whether how we will come up with the funds to make needed infrastructure investments. I haven't heard a lot of talk about planning for that provision, but, you know, the incoming governor is putting together a transition team. They're going to be looking at a whole host of issues to set their policy agenda. I think that's terrific advice to, you know, to make this one of their top priorities. Begin looking into the weeds and see exactly how this might affect different state agencies and begin planning for it.
Yeah, some agencies don't receive that much. Other agencies are, you know, almost entirely federal funded when you break it down.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, one of the key issues is Medicaid, and I just your Washington correspondent made mention of Medicaid. Medicaid is exempt from the provisions of sequestration, so there won't be any automatic cuts to Medicaid. So,
okay, good to clarify.
And that's a huge portion of the monies that we get from the federal government here in New Hampshire.
Let's take one more call, Brian, if we could. This is Gary joining us from Nashua. Hi, Gary. You're on the air. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, you know, two things that really bother me is, to me, it all gets down to jobs. And we need jobs because jobs create income. You know, income creates spending, which is, you know, 2/3 of our GNP. It goes to pay Social Security taxes, which, you know, need to help our older people, and Medicare taxes help our older people. and just people just, you know, saving for themselves. So it really gets down to jobs. And I agree with the caller before that just said, you know, right now people who own businesses, job creators, you know, they're inundated by this quagmire of not being able to make decisions because businessmen, you know, have to deal with very high health care costs, you know, for their employees, and also just a lot of regulation. So I really don't see an answer to a lot of these problems unless we get a more healthy, you know, from the administration we have now, attitude about how important jobs are. The other thing is I worry about, you know, to me we're living in a fictitious world where 40% of our taxes are going to pay the debt. And we live in a world where the, you know, the 10-year rate's now about like 1.5, 1.6%. You know, this quantitative easing has really made it easy for us to borrow money. But, you know, if these things were let go and we had real rates of maybe 3, 4, 5%, you know, we could be having 50 or 60% of our taxes going to pay debt. So,
get the debt under control, Gary. That's the bottom line you're saying. The
thing is, we have we have all these entitlement programs that have to be paid for. We have all these, you know, pension programs that have to be funded. We have all these, you know, all these uses of funds. But I don't think people realize that, you know, where are you going to get the money to pay all these? And we need to have a better climate for jobs and a better understanding that we live in an artificial world where
Gary, I got to cut you off there. I do apologize, but you got the last word in, Gary, and thanks a lot for calling. All right, and again, Brian, that's a strong voice there for dealing with these fiscal issues. I have to let you go, Brian, but I really appreciate you giving us your time this morning. Thanks a lot.
Well, thank you very much, Laura, for inviting me.
That's Brian Gottlob, president of Polycon Research, which focuses on economic and public policy issues. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Samantha Johnson. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
Next week on The Exchange, we begin with one New Hampshire doctor's call for a ban on high school football. Then, now that the election dust has settled, we sit down with a roundtable of Granite State Republicans on what happened and what happens next. And later, investigative journalist Tracy McMillan goes undercover and dispels some myths about where our food comes from. Email us at nhpr.org and join us all next week for The Exchange, every morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. here on NHPR.
The Domestic Hour of the Friday News Roundup next at 10.